Your name?
Mike Elk.
Your profession?
I'm a labor journalist.
Where?
I'm a contributing editor for In These Times magazine. Occasionally I write for Harper's Magazine, American Prospect. And I was formerly a contributor to the Huffington Post.
Formerly?
Formerly, yes. I was fired from an unpaid contributing position. Only in 2011 do people get fired from unpaid jobs. But I was fired from as a contributor from the Huffington Post for helping a group of 200 construction workers break into a conference of mortgage bankers.
Explain that.
Explain the event, or...
Yeah.
So, basically what occurred was there was a group of construction workers, and I've seen as a labor journalist, labor stories not get much coverage at all. This is due to a variety of factors. Labor stories simply just aren't seen as exciting. They're just another story of another group of workers getting screwed. And so they don't get good coverage. And there was a group of workers that wanted to get into this mortgage bankers conference because the CEO of a home construction company that had received $1 billion in stimulus money but hadn't created a single job was speaking there. They couldn't get in, so we figured out a plan where we were going to use my press pass to help them get in. And so I got in with some other guys, and we let in 200 construction workers into the middle of this mortgage bankers conference on live CNBC. It got quite a bit of coverage. New York Times, Wall Street Journal, CNBC. It got picked up by just about everybody, much more so than a typical blog that I would have written for In These Times or another publication would have gotten picked up. So as a labor journalist, I felt it was ethical to do, because otherwise their story would have been ignored. And my job is to help people have their voices be heard. Huffington Post didn't like that I associated myself with them, and they decided to discontinue their relationship with me after writing 105 posts for them.
Just logistically, for a sec, how does like one press pad get 200 people into an event?
Well, I entered. I shared it with a union leader from the sheet metal workers, and we entered in, and then we opened up the doors, and we let the rest of the guys in.
So you're fired from a job that doesn't pay you. How many other labor reporters are at the Huffington Post?
They don't have a full-time labor reporter. Sam Stein does do some coverage of the political decisions of the AFL-CIO, and he does very good coverage. But Sam does not cover strikes or lockouts or organizing drives or anything like that. So they don't have anybody that really covers the labor movement beat at the Huffington Post outside of some of the grander political decisions.
Would you say... it was interesting reading the piece that you wrote about your dismissal, your firing. Mm-hmm. The changes you started to notice at the Huffington Post, some of the changes it was going through. Talk about that. And then within the last days, we've seen the sale of the Huffington Post to AOL. But some of the changes that you were noticing preceding this.
Yeah, I think there were two big things I noticed before this. Over the summer, the thing that troubled me the most was Arianna Huffington played a big role in promoting the movie Waiting for Superman. She offered free screenings to everybody who wrote for the website, all 1,000 or so people. And this was just atrocious, since this is a film that was not even considered factually accurate enough to be nominated for the Academy Awards, that basically bashes teachers' unions as being the cause of all the problems of education. So she promoted this. She put Davis Guggenheim on the front page. She put all these big names on the front page, and she was heavily, heavily promoting Waiting for Superman because it was popular and because that got a lot of traffic because, you know, when you have a movie in a box office, people want to read about it. So she made a decision to help attack teacher unions in order to get more traffic to the website.
And that particular movie, having covered DCPS, District of Columbia Public Schools, promotes Michelle Rhee in really, I actually have not been able to see it. I am going to see it soon. My understanding is it promotes Michelle Rhee in really pretty unbelievable ways, who has attacked teachers' unions. I didn't realize that the Huffington Post and Arianna Huffington was promoting that film.
Oh, yeah. They were heavily promoting it because it was popular. You know, Michelle Rhee, you know, and all the figures associated with, like, Michelle Rhee, who, you know, just came out as lying about her track record, who has gone on to work in the private sector off of the very corporations that stand to benefit from charter schools being privatized and whatnot. So she heavily promoted that. The second thing that troubled me was when they got heavily behind the rally for sanity, the John Stewart rally. Basically, the message of the John Stewart rally was that both sides have gone too far, that aggressive, in-your-face tactics, civil disobedience, things like that, we shouldn't engage in as a country. And he bashed a number of left-wing voices like Code Pink, who's done some very aggressive work on the war. I thought this was an awful thing, because if you look at Martin Luther King, and I wrote about this at the time, if you look at Martin Luther King, if you look at these other people, American progressive change has never occurred without movements of mass civil disobedience, the type of civil disobedience that John Stewart was bashing. And that's always been the history, whether it's the Flint sit-down strike or, you know, shutting down whole cities in the South during the civil rights movement. We've always had to fight through being able to shut down things and being able to literally not engage in the type of polite discussion that John Stewart and other people wanted to engage in. That's not how American progressive change happened. So I saw that as a troubling moment when she got heavily behind this rally, which was just an entertainment, a feel-good event.
And then reading from your piece on your firing, the Huffington Post has helped redefine journalistic rules and ethics. Now, with actions like my dismissal and the hiring of mainstream establishment journalists like Howard Fineman and Peter Goodman, Howard Fineman and Peter Goodman, it's signaling that it is abandoning its guerrilla roots and adopting a more mainstream corporate style of objective journalism. This strand of corporate journalism was unable to expose unnecessary wars and looming economic catastrophes. It has failed us time and again. In contrast, my unconventional actions helped expose a nearly $1 billion scandal. Any comment furthering what you just wrote there?
Yeah, the hiring of Howard Fineman and Peter Goodman were troubling actions. Howard Fineman has been an establishment reporter who says whatever the conventional wisdom is in Washington for years. Peter Goodman is a reporter with the New York Times who writes about economic issues, who basically is a hardcore pro-free trade guy who, you know, thinks free trade is the best thing in the world, who never writes about unions but laminates at workers' wages falling while never covering, you know, union busting and promoting free trade. So these two reporters, and, you know, they both made massive sums of money. I mean, Howard Fineman got, you know, $500,000 a year. Peter Goodman got $300,000 a year. These two hirings were just sort of, all right, well, you're part of the establishment now with two reporters like that on board.
Robert Perry, who writes at Consortium News, had a piece, Hard Lessons from the HuffPost Sale, and it begins like this. U.S. progressive media has had a tough few weeks. First, Keith Olbermann, the pioneer for liberal programming during MSNBC's evening hours, was sent packing. Then Arianna Huffington allowed AOL to subsume her Huffington Post into AOL's right-of-center content for the price tag of $315 million. Leftist bloggers who had provided free content to Huffington Post, enabling it to become a valuable property, found themselves quite literally sold out, with Huffington pocketing $18 million while making clear that she won't battle for the liberal banner inside AOL.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think already this week you're seeing people from the Heritage Foundation blogging there. You're seeing all kind of voices getting a platform. I mean, they're still promoting the false link about vaccines causing autism. I mean, they just sort of go with whatever gets traffic. They don't have no base. Although there are a lot of very principled reporters there. I have a lot of respect for Ryan Grimm in particular. Arthur Delaney's done great work on the housing crisis. Zach Carter is a friend of mine, somebody who's very tough. They have a lot of very tough reporters there. But increasingly, the editorial direction is more to whatever grabs traffic on the internet and less away from that. And so you have to wonder, when you bring in, you know, some of these new names like Goodman and Fineman, are they going to change the nature of the Huffington Post? Are they going to make it more of a, you know, what every other publication is?
I thought it was interesting to note, he mentioned Robert Perry in his piece, Keith Olbermann, who was, well, departed all of a sudden at the same time as Comcast was taking over NBC, mm-hmm. or has announced that that is moving forward. And here, your firing takes place, it just precedes Huffington Post being subsumed by AOL. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I don't think AOL was looking at me as sort of, we need to get rid of Mike Elk. I think it was part of a general pattern. I think more that what happened, Peter Goodman, the person that fired me, gets paid $15,000 per speech that he gives in front of corporate conferences. And Peter Goodman didn't want to upset the type of corporate conference holders that have those types of speeches. So I think this was sort of more the pattern, the thinking of people that are very mainstream, that are very beholden to the corporate media.
Tim Rutten in the Los Angeles Times had an op-ed, and he writes, to grasp the Huffington Post business model, you need to picture a galley rowed by slaves and commanded by pirates. Given the fact that its founder, Huffington, reportedly will walk away from this acquisition with a personal profit of as much as $100 million, it makes all the Huffington Post raging against Wall Street plutocrats, crony capitalism, and the Bush and Obama administration's insensitivities to the middle class and the unemployed a bit much. Any comments, Mike Elk?
It's definitely something that's, you know, writers have been exploited. I certainly was exploited by them. I mean, I wrote 105 articles for free. And, you know, during this time, sometimes I could get other people to pay me to do that. Most of the time, I couldn't get other people to pay me to do that. I wrote these articles for free in hopes of someday getting a job. I had even interviewed for a job with the Huffington Post Investigative Fund. I'd had multiple discussions with Ryan Grimm, who's the D.C. bureau chief, about the possibility of joining as a labor reporter. And, you know, I had discussions. And so they were just sort of, well, we don't have enough money for a labor reporter yet, but maybe, and maybe have a shot. You know, just keep giving us stuff. And, you know, I'd even worked with them on giving them exclusive material about a uranium facility where they hired untrained scabs that were causing accidents during a lockout. And they would put it on their HuffPost Hill emails as Mike Elk, HuffPost labor reporter / blogger. And so it was, the lines were getting very blurred. And this is a publication, I was giving them two or three articles a week. This is a publication that doesn't have a full-time labor reporter, and I was giving them very in-depth coverage of the labor movement.
Isn't one of the things you were quote-unquote fired for because you identified yourself as a Huffington Post blogger?
Yeah. Now, this was one of the more incredible things, which is that Peter Goodman accused me of lying by identifying myself as with the Huffington Post. Since technically I'm not a paid Huffington Post staffer, but I thought, well, you know, I write on the website. I write there all the time. People, when they read it, think I write for them. So it's not a problem, in my opinion, to go to a, you know, an event and identify yourself as being with the Huffington Post, because I thought, well, I write there, so what's the big deal? I mean, nobody had ever told me I couldn't do that. There was no signed contract or anything like that. But apparently this upset them, the representation of this. Now, I want to bring up another important point, which is, I use the Huffington Post's name to disrupt a conference of bankers. Had I been a gay rights activist and disrupted a conference of Christian conservatives with 200 gay rights activists, I probably would have gotten a job, not gotten fired. I think when you cross people with money, there are serious consequences. But if you're making fun of poor people, if you're making fun of the poor working class people that are Christian conservatives, that's totally fine. It doesn't matter which way you do that. So I think there's a lot of, you know, my decision was entirely motivated by class here.
On that decision and ethics of it, you write, was helping union workers disrupt a conference of bankers an ethical thing for a journalist to do? This is a subject for debate. In my view, however, it's unethical for publications like the Huffington Post to not have a single full-time labor reporter and for corporate media to routinely ignore workers' struggles. This reality forces freelance journalists like myself to pull stunts in order to hold corporations accountable and get workers' voices heard.
Yeah, I think this is entirely true, is that we're at a situation where there's no need for labor reporting. I mean, you have the biggest attacks on public employees, unions, happening in the country. Yesterday, the governor of Wisconsin said he would use the National Guard to stop public employees from striking. We haven't seen that since the 1960s, since when Dr. Martin Luther King was shot in Memphis, that the National Guard is called out during a strike. So it's clear that, there's very little coverage in the media. You don't see coverage on the mainstream news channels of labor stories. You don't see coverage of factory closings. You don't see coverage of you know, atrocious violations of labor rights. I mean, 300,000 workers are prevented every year from joining a union for illegal union busting tactics such as firing. And you never see anything on the news about that. And not only that, so we've gone through this great economic depression. And, you know, if you read a book by Matt Taibbi, you know, my colleague who I respect very much, he writes a whole book, and when you get Griftopia, where he says the cause of our economic depression is all the financial speculation on Wall Street. That's true in a way, but that's only half the story. The reason why Americans had to max out their credit cards and do all these other things is because they stopped making money at their jobs. And the reason they stopped making money at their jobs was in the 1980s, we decided to get rid of unions in this country, to engage on it in an unprecedented period of illegal union busting. And that's why American wages aren't rising, is because workers can't join unions. And this is a significant story that nobody in the media is telling. Even progressive journalists like Matt Taibbi aren't putting attention on the cause of union busting, which is what is really driving down wages in this country.
Here you were writing for the Huffington Post, one of the largest news outlets in this country, unpaid labor reporter, the only one there, and fired. Any final thoughts you want to share, Mike Elk?
I think what was interesting about it was that there are so many reporters that sell out to Wall Street, the point that, that print Wall Street's talking points, that do all the bidding of Wall Street. And the thing that people said to me is, by helping these workers, you showed that you were too much on the side of workers. And sure, there's 1,000 reporters that are sellouts to Wall Street, but how about 3 or 4 that are sellouts to working people? I'm perfectly fine with people calling me a sellout to the working class. I'm perfectly fine with people saying Mike Elk is totally beholden to the interest of somebody making $17,000 a year that can't feed their kids. I'm fine with that. But there's something that's considered wrong. We have this political dichotomy where it's like you have to be in the center between left and right and analyze it. How can I change that I am a worker, that I can barely make a living in my reporting? How is that wrong? I mean, there's not, we think of corporations as another side of the political debate. Corporations aren't people, despite what the Supreme Court says. Corporations are money. And so do we have to give corporations the same privilege of neutrality that we give groups of people when they're debating? Because they're not people.
Thanks so much, Mike Elk.